believe we are to petitions. Number 11 is Elk Landowner Day.
Any days next?
Yes, please, sorry.
Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, Secretary Hepler, Tom Kirschman, Wildlife Division Director. There are three petitions in front of you today, commissioners, and first one is on elk landowner tags. Second is in respect to bobcat harvest reporting, and the third, non-meandered waters transportation lane. Again, quickly, as petitions come into you as the commission, you have a couple of options as you consider these in front of you. As we go through them, and the individuals, if they are present, want to provide some background and testimony to you, certainly provide that opportunity to them. I will share some perspectives from the agency and our recommendation on these as well. And then you as the commission have basically two options. Number one would be to accept the petition and move forward with the rule promulgation process. And then that would go into the public hearing portion. And then at a subsequent commission meeting, take public hearing testament and make some final decisions on those potential rules or adjustments to rules. Or the second option would be to deny the petition, have those discussions, and if that is the case, as a department, we would help generate a resolution which you as the commission would then have to adopt and support the reasons for denial of such petition as well. So, Mr. Chairman, I'll go right into the first one, if I may. The elk landowner tags. This was brought forward by Mr. Steve Cherkis, I believe is how his last name is pronounced, and he is on the line. What I would suggest, Mr. Chairman, is we take each petition one at a time, and that the first opportunity here would give Mr. Cherkis the chance to chime in and provide you, the commission, his reasons for bringing forward the petition on the elk landowner licenses.
Yes, please.
So, Mr. Cherkis, if you can hear us, if you would unmute yourself, and if you'd like to speak to the commissioners, this would be your opportunity to do so.
All right. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
All right. On the elk landowner tag, I'm a landowner down here in southwest South Dakota here, northeast Edgemont. Have lots of elk up in the hills here. And as a landowner, when I hunt deer as well, deer has a landowner-only option for South Dakota West River deer hunting, which I appreciate. I prefer to just hunt on my own land and enjoy, you know, taking the wildlife here over the year. And what I'm looking for is a similar option for the elk, to have an elk landowner-only, where you can only hunt on your land. Option for an elk license. I believe the only current option is an elk preference, which gives you the ability to hunt anywhere within the elk unit, not just on your own land. That's really the background on that request.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chairman, again, Tom Kirschman, would you like to conclude this particular petition, or would you like Mr. Cherkis, while he's on the line, to also provide his testimony on his second petition in relation to bobcats?
Sure.
Whichever way you'd like to take it.
As long as he's there, let's have him comment on the other one, too.
All right. on the bobcat harvest reporting, there's a couple items there that I would like to see if possible, which is, I believe somebody brought up or referenced it earlier as well in the open discussion. first part of that is presentation of the entire carcass. As far as I know, at least since I've been here for the last 5 years, the only part of the carcass they're using is the lower jaw that is cut off and then sent into state somewhere for, I think, looking at the teeth to age the cats. And what I would like to do there is not have to keep these carcasses to turn in their entirety, but rather just either one of two things, which would make it a lot simpler on the trapper or hunter, which would be the skull. The skull would be very easy to cut off and bring in. But I believe maybe the wardens would probably prefer that we actually just take the lower jaw off ourselves, because they wouldn't want the skull either. Currently, they are returning the entire carcass back to the hunter or trapper for us to dispose of, which in my case, I do use the carcasses for various things. I actually do eat the meat off the back straps of the cats. It's very tasty. And other parts of the cats I use as well. For example, the feet I use for coyote trapping as an attractor. but that is the first part of that request, which is not presenting the entire carcass, but either doing one or two things, the skull only, or just cut off the lower jaw with, just like the warden does now when you bring it in. It would make it a lot easier to transport, from my perspective and for them. Sometimes, you know, they don't want to have the whole carcass. You know, you have an animal that doesn't have any skin on it, out in public. You know, it's not good for public eyes to see as well. So it would make that process a lot simpler as well, so that, you know, you don't have to meet in secret someplace in order for nobody seeing this thing. The second part of that is the days, the number of days to present the bobcat for tagging, the pelt for tagging, which is now currently 5 days. I would like to see that expanded, you know, whether it's 10 days, 2 weeks, or even preferably like other states do, like Wyoming. You don't have to present it anytime through the season, up to, I think, 10 days past the end of the season to get those pelts tagged. It would make it much easier, not only on the trapper or hunter, but also on the game warden. It's makes it kind of hard to meet up every 5 days, especially if you're trapping and catching a cat, you know, every 3 days or every 6 days or whatever. In my case, you know, it's an hour and a half out of every time we got to go meet up to egg pelts, because I have to travel a half an hour to get there, and then you know, it takes a little bit to get all the paperwork done, and then another half hour traveling back, and you waste a lot of time and effort meeting up. Make it a lot simpler and a lot more efficient if we could do that less often. Any questions on either of those?
Any questions? Comments? Thank you very much. So, Tom, should we go back and help plan over?
So, Mr. Chairman, we'll go back to the first petition that Mr. Church has spoke on, and that is on the elk landowner tag concept that he brought forward. Certainly a discussion that's not a new one to you as a commission body and us as a department. This has been a conversation for the last handful of years in particular. More recently here, we actually brought forward a recommendation earlier this year and actually tabled it or pulled it at that time, just because of the challenges of getting out and having further discussions with landowners, other interested parties, and even just discussions between the department and the commission as well. So since that time also, we know this is an important topic to a lot of people. There's been a lot of interest in this. We are currently working on the revision of the elk management plan here in South Dakota, and we know this is a topic that we've already started some of those discussions with that stakeholder group as well. Again, we know that there's a lot of folks that are interested in this particular concept. There's ongoing discussions around this and elk landowner preference just in general as well. And while we certainly agree that this is a topic that needs to be figured out and figured out exactly what direction we may or may not want to go into the future, we do bring forward a recommendation to you for denying of the petition for the primary reason, quite honestly, we go through these discussions with stakeholder groups, which do include landowners, NGOs, sportsmen, other interested folks in respect to elk management in South Dakota. We believe it'd be a little premature to take some action right now when we're having those discussions happening and give some further discussion and dialogue with that stakeholder group in particular as we go through that management plan revision. We don't see this topic going away, but it's one that we know needs further discussion, further dialogue. And for that reason alone, we would recommend that you deny the petition for the creation and moving forward with the elk landowner own tag concept right now.
Thank you, Tom. Is there a motion to deny, accept one or the other?
Mr. Chairman, make that motion to deny.
Thank you. I'll second. Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Charter.
Question and a comment. What is the current acreage requirement?
Current acreage requirement for landowner preference is 240 acres for the elk hunting season.
Okay. Thank you. I agree with your, with the ongoing discussions. I think it would be premature to do something like this. And I also believe that, you know, I, this would certainly be a baby step towards potentially where we may be going. I think it really needs to be part of a broader discussion on what landowner preference means for both elk and deer across the state. Because I'm one of those that believes that if you're a landowner, you should be able to get a tag. And I'm not sure the amount of acres you own is material. Now, I'm saying that without having done a lot of deep dive into it, but it doesn't make sense to, in eastern South Dakota, you have to have 160 acres. In West River, you have to have, what, 660 acres to get landowner preference, which is part of the non-resident. In the Black Hills, it's 260. I think we have too many varying rules out there, and quite frankly, I'm not sure that if you have a whole bunch of elk on your property and you have 100 acres, and the person with 1,000 acres has very few, that doesn't make their acreage that much, you know, more important than one with 100 acres. I would like to see us move in the direction, or certainly study it, what could be a general rule of landowner tag. And again, that would be only landowner tag. So if you want to do landowner preference in any county, it would be landowner preference on your land only, which I know would just totally upset the apple cart on the current deer draw situation. But if we're giving out preference to a landowner because of depredation on their own property, I think they should be hunting their own property. Because the deer are eating the stuff on my land doesn't mean that I get a tag so I can go over and hunt Joe's land. So I think it needs to be part of a broader discussion, and I hope the issues that I brought up and suggested are certainly floated within those stakeholder groups to see the general public thought on that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Olson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Mike.
Scared to touch anything. thanks, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Olson here. I'm going to also support the motion to deny, and I would assume that Steve isn't part of the elk stakeholder group. And so he would know that, you know, it's kind of historical for us as we worked on turkey management plans and deer, antelope, you name it, that we don't, you know, as we're trying to finalize the strategic plan or working group plan, that we don't make changes to get ahead of the card, so to speak, on those deals. So I would suggest that and encourage Steve, if he's still listening, that if the changes that he's has in his petition aren't addressed as part of that finalized plan with the elk stakeholder group, that he can again bring back a petition we address with that.
Commissioner Locken.
Yes, Commissioner Locken here. I've got quite a bit of experience with land deeds and stuff. There's not all that many quarters that are 160 acres, quarter of land. It's referred to as 160, but it may or may not be 160. And an 80 may or may not be 80 acres. It may be 78 acres, 79 acres. But I think probably we should be looking in the future of the intent of it. If he's the only owner on that quarter and the only owner on that 80, it's probably should be considered 240 acres. A lot of times you give a deed to a highway right away. I don't know his situation, but a lot of times you give a deed for a highway right away or something like that, and then you're giving up an acre and disqualifying yourself. We should be looking at that anyway. Thank you.
Chairman Jensen.
Commissioner Spring.
If we considered the elk deal and knocked it down to smaller acres, the licenses would probably double in some units because there's so many small tracts of land in the Black Hills area, and it would be a huge change in the way the elk deal is set up, just to give you an idea on that.
That whole issue was addressed a year and a half ago in Rapid City, and we had a room full of landowners who thought the curve was pretty good. So maybe things changed a little bit.
That discussion has happened numerous times over the years, and one of the challenges is what is the right acreage, right? Is it the 240? Is it less? Is it more? And what are the reasons why to support one acreage over another? And certainly as Commissioner Springs just talked about, mentioned, that's one of the key points that comes up in those discussions. If you change that minimum acreage, what does that mean to the overall number of licenses that can be allocated out there? Not only that would go to landowner preference, but then also to the sportsmen out there. So that's all part of that discussion. And it becomes even more heightened because it is a much more limited resource and a limited number of tags than we talk about deer hunting opportunities in South Dakota as well.
Commissioner Sharp. Thank you, Mr. Chair. To make sure those discussions stay very robust, I would also want to mention non-resident as well. If you own land as a non-resident, I think that should be part of the discussions, whether for deer or elk or anything. Because just because you live a mile south of the South Dakota border in Nebraska, you own 600 acres in South Dakota, that doesn't mean you have any less interest, pay less taxes, or less investment in that land and keeping it good than the person that lives 2 miles north of the border with that, you know, same 600 acres. So I think to make sure that we're making sure we're keeping the interest of all landowners in front of us, I think that should be part of the discussions as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Comments?
Mr. Spring. I stand totally with you, Mr. Sharp, on what you just said.
Any other comments? If not, we'll have a roll call vote on the motion, which is to deny the elk and the rear. So you want to call roll?
Beat?
Aye.
Lockett?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sharp?
Aye.
Green?
Aye.
Whitmire?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
All in favor.
Thank you. So now we'll go to Bobcat Harvest.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, continuing on here. So the petition in respect to the Bobcat season, Bobcat harvesting, and two pieces, as Mr. Church has shared with you, there was two parts of it, remove or extend the five-day reporting, and then from the presentation of body parts from the Bobcat to the department. As mentioned, discussion with staff on this particular one and looking at the grand picture of this, certainly understand some of the points that Mr. Turk has brought forward. I would share with you that over the years at times, that full body carcass has been valuable to us in respect to obtaining and collecting biological information from bobcats themselves. We've had studies where the full carcass, when it comes in, we look at placental scars from a reproductive potential. We looked at stomach contents from diet issues, taken other tissue samples just from the standpoint of health or condition of the animals as well. That also allows us to gain information in respect to, the age and sex ratios and some of those things related to bobcats themselves. So we do see that the full body carcass is an important piece to that collection of information.
So our recommendation from that standpoint would be to retain our current approach, what we have in rule, and ask and require that those folks that are involved with hunting and trapping and bobcats turn in the entire carcass. As Mr. Cherkis did mention, though, too, you know, there are individuals that are not going to want the full carcass back, and there are others that may want them, and for the various reasons that he described. And so obviously when that check-in process is done, if they want that carcass back, it can go back to them after our staff go ahead and tag the pelt itself, which we have to do in tagging in respect to the federal regulations and CITES tags with them. In respect to the five-day period, I certainly understand where it comes from. One of the things that we do try to do is make it somewhat easy from the perspective. I know in this conversation it was made specific reference to conservation officers and to meet up with them or have one of them get in contact with them or have them come out and check it in. It is important to understand that it does not have to be a conservation officer. Any of our trappers or wildlife damage specialists can go ahead and check in and report the animals. Our biologists can do the same thing, so it's not specifically just directed to conservation officers alone that have to do these activities. The five-day period, also from collecting some of that biological information and time of harvest, location of harvest, is valuable to us that we have that more timely information. It's easier for the hunter slash trapper to remember those details of the harvest as well. And from the perspective when we do collect those information, biological information from the carcass, the whole animal itself, the newer the carcass, the better obviously that it is, and the better condition and shape that the carcass is as well. So, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, our recommendation would be to move forward with a denial. We collect very valuable information from the bobcat carcasses themselves. We try to make it as easy as we can to allow multiple different staff within the agency to conduct the check-in of that critter. And with that, I would stand by for any other questions that you may have.
We have a motion to accept or deny the petition. Please.
I'll move to deny.
There's a second?
Second.
Discussion, Commissioner Sharp.
I guess one of the questions I have, or Mr. Sharp here, I guess one of the questions I have, Tom, is the reference of hard to get time with a CO within 5 days. You mentioned other staff can do it. I'm not sure how many times this happens in the Black Hills area, but how problematic is it for staff to leave the office to go down to where the carcass would be to get it? I mean, how far out are we talking here, and how tough is that? I mean, is it a problem to send staff out and they spend an hour to go get it? I mean, is that vehicles available? Is staff available to leave on that type of thing?
Through the chair. Commissioner Sharp, no, we are more than happy and willing to make accommodations to work with those individuals. Certainly there'll be times where those hunters slash trappers will make the contact and bring it into our office or meet up with a conservation officer, one of our WDS or biologists. But the same would hold true. Obviously, we have staff out and about doing other duties and tasks. In those arrangements, they can stop by and do the check-in at their facility or at their domicile or their location or meet halfway. The willingness is there to meet folks when needed. And so we have the ability to do that. Understand things don't always line up exactly perfect for everybody, right? But we certainly are willing to do that and work with those individuals because of those requirements that we're asking.
Super. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Olson.
Just one question for clarification. Is it an all or nothing deal with the carcass? Like, say, a lot of people do the European mounts and they want the head. Do we need the jaw, bottom jaw, or can they get enough data from the rest of the carcass if they were to, you know, keep the whole head?
Through the chair, Commissioner Olson, yeah, we do collect the bottom jaw because one of the key things that we do there is extraction of teeth, and they go in and are aged at a laboratory as well. But that's a good question from a European skull mount concept in that. That's something that I will go back and have further discussions with staff. If we can look at alternative ways moving into the future to be more accommodating to some of those individuals that may want that. But right now we do require that forward draw in particular to be turned in.
Chairman Jensen, Commissioner Springer. In the area I left and to the north, Zawadada, CEO and Harding County, there's some people that I know of might have to drive 100 miles to even meet the conservation officer halfway. I mean, and to get some of that schedule sometimes pretty tough. And just to see where some of us are, you know, complications.
Yeah, through the chair, Commissioner Springs, certainly understand that in some of those larger, more rural counties and areas, even meeting halfway can be a good drive, right? Just as you described. But again, what I would offer, looking at this from the information standpoint, we believe it's that important and we want to get that information from those folks. I would offer to you that we're going to be willing to make accommodations and work with those folks. And if that means we need to drive out farther and meet up with them, then in those circumstances, we should be willing to do that. And we certainly can do that.
One thing I thought is, you know, I think it extends 5 days to a week might leave you a little bit, but that's something that we can think about or whatever, but it can be tough to get it scheduled.
Agreed. And I think based on this discussion, I will go back and we'll have conversations with our field staff and talk about that some more and see, is there a better date? Is there a better time frame? Or is five still probably the most logical and best? I know our staff and officers and biological staff had that conversation, but we can continue that and see if there is a better time frame than what we have right now.
Commissioner Whitmire, thank you. On the 5-day burden, should a trapper have a bobcat that needs to be reported and turned in? Does a 5-day burden necessarily fall upon them if they've contacted the department and said, I've got a cat here, I can't get to town? Come day six, you know, whatever happens, weather, weekends and whatnot, is there the ability to forego that and give extensions readily and even in that as a matter of process?
Through the chair. Yes, so Commissioner Whitmire, certainly we understand that in particular, you look at, for example, in late December, January, weather can always be an issue, right? Road conditions can be an issue. I guess what I would offer up those individual hunters, trappers out there that they contact the department representative, again, whoever that might be, have that conversation. Honestly, if it ends up being one day later because of those circumstances, those staff and that individual are going to work that out. But those are reasonable. And we have to be reasonable and flexible under those types of circumstances. But what I would offer to you is the importance of, at minimum, the notification reaching out to that department representative to say, okay, I have a bobcat or I have three bobcats or whatever the situation might be. And then they can work those out between the two of them, the department rep and the sportsman and so.
Mr. Chair. Would it be perhaps a little more like 72-hour notice or something, or 48 hours even from the time you capture a bobcat to you report it so that that process can end? Would that be more practical, perhaps, than a 5-day turn-in notice or turn-in requirement?
Through the chair. Commissioner Whitmire, I mean, that's something we could look at. As the structure is set up right now, what it asks and requires is that that bobcat is checked in within the 5-day period where they harvest it. They can contact our department rep. We do have in the structure at the end of the season where you do need to contact the department representative within 24 hours if you have a bobcat in your possession, you're trapped. Within 24 hours of the season closing. And so that's a little bit different scenario, obviously, than during the middle of the season. To contact the department representative to say, I have a bobcat or I have X number of bobcats that I need to report in and check in. And then they make those arrangements. We could certainly look at that concept. I don't know that it's necessary from the standpoint of, you know, you have to call within 24 or 48 or 72 hours of harvesting one or more than one, and then have the criteria of meeting, checking it in 5 days. We could go back and look at that. I think as the structure set up right now, you have a 5-day window or 5-day period to make that arrangement and check the animal in. I would say again, like we just mentioned, if there's a circumstance where it's going to be 1 day later, they will work those situations out. I'm not sure if there's an advantage over having that, again, 24, 48, 72-hour call-in. But that's something that we could certainly talk about internally and bring that conversation back at another time. But I think in general, the system we have in place appears to be working quite well for the vast majority of the folks out there.
Any other questions or comments? So then we will vote on the motion, which is to deny the bobcat harvest reporting petition.
Steve?
Aye.
Bakken?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sharp?
Aye.
Spring?
Aye.
Whitmire?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
All in favor?
Okay, so we'll go to 13.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we'll go on to the next one. Again, I'll just offer up a thank you to Mr. Cherkis to bring those in as a petition and bringing forward some key points that, number one, have been on our radar as a commission department. We'll continue discussing and maybe bringing light to some other pieces that we can further look at and evaluate. And if it makes more sense from a customer service standpoint and collecting information, find that right balance, if there's an adjustment, we will bring that back to you as a recommendation. Moving on to the last petition from Mr. Tom Morcourt. And I don't know, Rachel or John, do you know Mr. Morcourt on to speak? Is
okay.
So the third petition that we have in front of you today, Mr. Morcourt from the northeast part of South Dakota, brought forward a petition here, specifically asking to seek some access on Pepper Slough and Collard County with the passage of a navigation lane essentially through not mean a body of water or a portion of water that's closed to get access to a public portion of the lake. So I guess, Mr. Chairman, I would offer if Mr. Marshall would like to give some background information to you, the commission, and then I can follow up from the department perspective.
Sure. Let's
do that. Mr. Marquardt, are you on the line? Mr. Marquardt, could you try it again? I can see he's unmuted.
Oh,
whatever reason, we cannot hear him yet. Tom, do you want to give it one more try?
We do this. Why don't there was one fellow who wants to speak for open forum. We get him on the line, he can do that. Then we'll take our afternoon break, and then maybe Mr. McCourt can get him on the line. We give him every opportunity.